Which is something that I've also sort of recently, well, I guess not also, but I've sort of recently gotten into since I came here to PI. And I've had some extremely good teachers and a fantastically talented graduate student, Stephen Feeney, to help me out in this analysis. And the basic question has to do with the CMB. So we have a standard model of cosmology, lambda CDM, which says that the universe is filled mostly with dark matter and dark energy, and that structure was seeded by Gaussian and nearly scale invariant density perturbations. And if you take the data and you ask about the statistics of fluctuations in the CMB, this model is really fantastically good at describing the data. So this is a picture of the angular power spectrum. The data is the points, and the red curve is the theory, and the fit is just absolutely fantastic. So the main question that I'll address today is, well, is there room for anything else, or is the standard model of cosmology all there is? And in particular, I want to focus on theories that predict features in the CMB, so real space features, on top of background fluctuations. So here is the temperature fluctuations as a function of viewing angle. And I can imagine there's some template that's modulating some background CMB fluctuations. And since everything is really small, the fractional fluctuations in the CMB are like 1 part in 10 to the 5, then this can be approximately written as a sum of some set of features plus a background fluctuation. And some examples of theories that do this, well, probably the most famous example is cosmic strings. So if there was some symmetry-breaking phase transition in the early universe that produced strings, then they are still compatible with the data if they make up about 10% of the power spectrum. We know they're not the dominant source of density fluctuations, but they could still be there. There are other types of topological defects, such as textures, which happen in theories with where global symmetries are broken. And something that I've worked on is the signature of cosmic bubble collisions, which are a possible signature of eternal inflation, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But at any rate, all of these theories predict some specific set of features on top of the background CMB. So here are my features. And of course, that's not all there is. If I include the CMB and the effects of instrumental noise, we're not measuring things perfectly, then in an incredibly exaggerated case, I get something like this. But in reality, when we look at a map of the CMB, it doesn't look like that. These things are really buried. Okay, so I have a really messy problem where the signal to noise is quite low. And given this realistic case, we want to know, does the data prefer a theory with features or not? So that's what I'll talk about. So what is a theory that predicts features? What do I need to specify in order to examine this? Well, first of all, you have to tell me what the general shape of the features are. I have to have some prediction for what's embedded in the data. So we predict that there's some template, and it's got some free parameters, which could be, say, its location on the sky, its intrinsic amplitude, its size, etc. And in general, all of these theories are somewhat stochastic in nature. So the actual realization of features that I see on the sky might be as simple as their position, could be a random variable. All these things are described by some probability distribution that I should be able to calculate from my theory. So this would tell me, you know, okay, the things should be isotropic on the sky, there's no preferred position. There should be a certain expected number of them, there should be, you know, expected range of amplitudes, etc. So this is what I get from theory. And then I want to know how to test the data. And being a Bayesian, what any good Bayesian wants is to be able to compare the probability for some model given the data to the probability for another given the data. And this is basically telling you how you should bet. So in particular, we want to test lambda CDM, the standard cosmological model, versus lambda CDM plus some theory of features. And there is a very convenient theory label, which is the expected number of such features on the CMB sky. because lambda CDM is just described by zero. I expect none. So we can sort of formally write down an expression for how I would evaluate these probabilities. And we can start with Bayes' theorem. And let's say that I've boiled everything down to this expected number. This is my theory label. So when I say I want the probability of model 1 versus model 2, I want the probability for some number of features versus 0. OK, and this is described by some theoretical prior. Yeah? So you basically will have to do some kind of simulation. So you need to define detectable. So if you have a theory and there's a range of amplitudes, say, that the features could have, there's going to be some lower limit on, you know, just what is so buried in the noise, the intrinsic CMB, that it's impossible to detect. And so this number is established by, you know, say, doing simulations or doing a crude estimate based on signal to noise of, you know, how many you'd actually expect to detect if they were in fact there. Yeah. So this is formed by knowing the theory prior, calculating a likelihood, that's the probability of the data given the theory parameters, and then dividing by an evidence. So again, this is possibly a somewhat stochastic process. So if I want to evaluate that likelihood, the actual number of things on the sky is going to be drawn from a distribution. And since these are spots on the sky, say, they're probably drawn from a Poisson distribution. It's just shot noise. And now to calculate this likelihood, I have to marginalize over all the parameters in the templates. Okay? So I've boiled everything down to this one number, which means I've marginalized over everything else. So that's part of the theory. If you have a theory of features, then you need to tell me what those theory priors are. That's right. So if you know nothing about the theory, then you could do something like that, assume some flat prior or some log prior. Yeah, that's right. So the actual thing that you need to deal with in terms of the data, so there are the theory priors, so you need to know those in advance. But the actual thing that you spend all of your time computing is this likelihood here, which for the CMB looks something like this. So I have some set of templates, T. I've got some huge data set, D. And then I've got a covariance matrix, which tells me under lambda CDM, in the absence of any of these features, how the data is correlated between different pixels. Okay. So D is the data at each pixel that I have on the sky. T is the value of the template at each pixel. And C, again, is the covariance matrix, which if there is no instrumental noise, and this is really just lambda CDM, a theory with Gaussian nearly scale invariant density perturbations, then it's described simply by a power spectrum. So that, say, that best fit power spectrum I showed you on the first slide, times some Legendre functions of the cosine of the angle between any two points. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So here you'd evaluate this expression. So if I want to back this up to here, lambda CDM is no expected templates. And so I'd evaluate this expression with no templates, which effectively means evaluating this likelihood with no templates. Okay? And then the penalty you're talking about comes from the fact that I have those theory priors on my parameters when there are templates, but there are no priors, if you will, if there are none. So it's all volume, the volume of parameter space penalty comes in through the theory priors. So the CMB in pixel space is correlated between different pixels, and the covariance matrix tells you exactly how that correlation works. Okay, but let's look at this. This is really a formal expression because I have to sum over all possible numbers of things that could be there formally. I have to integrate over a parameter space whose dimensionality scales with the number of things there are in any realization. And I have to consider where these features are. You know, they could be at any point on the sky whatsoever. There's no bias. So this is an enormous dimensional parameter space. This covariance matrix needs to get inverted to evaluate this expression, and there's a huge amount of data in any experiment like WMAP or Planck. And so this is just basically completely impossible at face value formally to evaluate. But there's a solution, which is to try and truncate that sum to a finite number of terms by first identifying some candidate features, so things that are most likely to contribute to that likelihood. And then we can find an approximation to this many-dimensional integral by looking at regions of parameter space where the likelihood is large. In other words, I want to take the CMB sky and I want to find the locations where this integral, say, over positions, which is going to be one of my model parameters, yields the largest contribution to the likelihood. OK, so how does that work? First, we need a way to locate candidates. And the way that we do that is basically to use what's called a needlet, which is a form of wavelet transform. This is a way of filtering the CMB sky to pick out features that have a certain size and are significant in some sense under lambda CDM. And there's a decomposition, just like a spherical harmonic decomposition of the temperature map in terms of some coefficients times these special functions, the needlets. And the needlets are described by a frequency, a size, just like in Fourier space, but also a position, okay? And there's both a forward and reverse transform, so I can figure out these coefficients and reconstruct the map. I should have included a plot. Basically, it looks like the chalk. Something like this in real space. Yeah. And in Fourier space, they're exactly localized, so they go to zero between some, they're only non-zero in some range of L. So they're localized a little bit in position space and a little bit in Fourier space. Okay, so just as a pictorial illustration of how this works, here's a simulated CMB sky, and somewhere in this map, I've embedded a feature. It's there. It's kind of hard to see with the naked eye. So I filter the map at different scales using this transform here. K is position, so at each pixel in a map for fixed frequency size, there is a value for these coefficients. And if I look at increasingly smaller scales, eventually I see some huge hit at the actual position of this feature that I've artificially implanted in this map. So by looking at peaks in the value of these coefficients, you can get some idea for where you might have significant candidates. And you can do this more optimally. This is fairly generic, but you can design filter functions that are optimized to a specific shape of feature that you might be interested in. That's right. OK, so let's say we've located a candidate. Then we can split the data into two pieces. One we'll call region one, which contains our candidate feature, and then the rest of the sky. And in this case, you can find an approximation to that nasty formal expression, which looks something like this. It's in fact very simple. So there's some prior on this number. There's a term that comes from that Poisson distribution. And then there's this thing, rho, which is basically a number that tells you how much better do you describe the data by adding one template in that patch, where I've marginalized over all the parameters in the template. And that looks something like this. Here's that penalty factor coming from the prior that you were asking about there. And I can evaluate this. And you can then test how good this approximation is under lambda CDM, et cetera, but I don't have time to go into that. Just tell you that it's usually a really good approximation. And you can generalize this into an extraordinarily nasty expression, which is completely general for some number NB of candidates, where this is just all the combinatorics that take care of, you know, every possible grouping of templates with different blobs. And then we want to know numerically, okay, how do we evaluate this expression? So let's talk a little bit about CMB data and how it's typically analyzed. So you can go to the Lambda website, NASA, to just get all the data from the WMAP experiment. And it comes in a FITS format if you're interested. And it's you can download full sky data at 5 different frequencies. The reason that WMAP measures the CMB at different frequencies is that astrophysical foregrounds vary with frequency, whereas the primary CMB doesn't. So you can get rid of foregrounds. And the data is represented using what's known as the HeelPix pixelization scheme. So at each point on the sphere, you have a value for delta T over T, say. And this is called HeelPix because it's a hierarchical equal area isolatitude pixelization, which means that each pixel is surrounded by a polygon of equal area. Pixels are at the same latitude. And it's hierarchical because I can take a pixel at one level and divide it into 4 at one lower level.
Do you know why I remember you were
talking about? I think there was a choice made at some point, and this was the choice made. This is nice because there's an exact spherical harmonic transform that's extremely fast to evaluate, so the analysis of data becomes extremely easy when you use this. And the way that the pixelization is labeled is by this number n side. So the total number of pixels is 12 times n side squared, and n side tells you which level you're at in this hierarchy. So for WMAP data, n side is 512, meaning that there's about 3 million pixels of data on the full sky, and that's fixed basically by Nyquist frequency, which says that we should have 2 pixels per beam width. The experiment measures the CMB through a beam, and so it smears out things on a scale of about 0.2 degrees for the highest resolution. And there's a lot of really nice software packages available that are also public, and you can download from the Lambda website. So there's a HeelPix software package, which is extremely user-friendly. It's available in Fortran 90, C++, IDL, the interactive data language. It's parallelized. And again, you know, it has a number of facilities. So the pixelization allows you to perform really fast and accurate spherical harmonic transforms. So there's utilities in there where you just say, give me the spherical harmonic coefficients of a map, and it does it in seconds. There's subroutines to manipulate the data, rotate maps, locate pixels. You can perform these forward and inverse spherical harmonic transforms, file I/O with this FITS format, and everything is all just a really nice set of subroutines that you can call. And then there's also facilities which you can access at the command line to, say, simulate CMB maps, find power spectra of CMB maps, visualize the data, make plots of the data and different projections, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a really fantastic set of tools that, that you can be up and running with in a matter of days. Even a theorist like me can figure out how to use it. And then some other tools that go into our analysis, there's a really nice sampling algorithm called MultiNest, which we use to evaluate these multidimensional integrals that I showed you before. And then this nasty inversion of the covariance matrix is performed using LAPACK and other libraries. So here's a schematic of the actual numerical pipeline we use to go from a temperature map to a prediction for the posterior, which tells me if I have features or not in my data. So start with a temperature map, calculate the ALMs, perform this needlet transform to find peaks in these coefficients where the significance threshold, say I want to judge if this is really a significant feature or not under Lambda CDM, is defined by performing a bunch of simulated data simulations with just Lambda CDM. And from this, you get a set of blobs that contain the candidates. So I just cut out the parts of the data where the candidates could possibly be. And then for each blob, you, in this part of the sky, figure out the inverse of the covariance matrix inside that blob. And that's non-trivial because, well, first of all, the noise properties change depending on where you are in the sky. So the covariance is non-diagonal. And the other thing is that the CMB sky is typically masked because there's all sorts of astrophysical foregrounds that you don't want in your data. And so you need to figure out what the inverse of this matrix where you've got pieces of it masked out are. And that's, in general, a fairly hard problem. Once we have that, you can then sample this multidimensional integral, which we do using MultiNest. And then you get these patch-based evidence ratios, which you then sew together into this nasty formula, which tells you all the combinatorics. And then that's the answer. So the limitations of this analysis basically surround the amount of data. Each blob contains a huge amount of data. There's 3 million pixels total. And this covariance matrix, if you did it on the full sky, would be the task would be to invert a non-diagonal 3 million by 3 million matrix. So to do this in the most straightforward way, you just store the covariance matrix as an array. And doing so requires an extremely large amount of RAM. So currently, the best machine we have access to is a 672 gigabyte shared memory machine. So this is pretty substantial. And if I look on this plot, the red line, the red horizontal line is 672. And the largest covariance matrix we can invert, these lines correspond to different levels in the pixelization. This one is WMAP. So the intersection of that line with our limit tells us how big of a patch we can work with, and it's about 20-ish degrees. So that's the main limitation. We just can't, at WMAP resolution, invert a covariance matrix in a patch bigger than 20 degrees. However, we can get around that by first identifying the candidates, cutting out the patch, and if that patch is too big, we can just degrade the map to coincide with our resources. And this is sped up by parallelizing the code, et cetera. So I'll just present some results real quick, since I only have a minute, about the picture of eternal inflation. So in eternal inflation, it's posited that there was a very fastly expanding epoch in the early universe from which you have a phase transition to different phases by the production of these bubbles. And since these bubbles are formed in an expanding universe, as they expand, they're getting pulled apart from each other. So then in general, the phase transition just never completes. Okay, so I get this soup of bubbles. And inside one of these bubbles, you can embed our observable universe. So there we are. And although the phase transition doesn't complete, there are collisions between bubbles. And you can predict the number of these that you expect us to have causal access to. And what they do is perturb the early universe and thus leave features in the CMB. So we have a theory which predicts a specific set of features. You can predict the number you expect, and you can find a probability distribution for their sizes, amplitude, and locations. So we have everything we need to test this theory. And so here are the possible outcomes. Everything is, again, boiled down to this expected number. So no detection would mean that this posterior is just peaked around zero. And then you might have a detection, which would occur if you had a posterior that was not peaked around zero. So here's the results from actual data. This is a particular band of the WMAP experiment. If you perform this needlet transform, you find 11 features that we deem significant and should be tested. They range between about 5 and 14 degrees. And so we, again, carve up the sky into these blobs that contain the candidates. And then we evaluate these local evidence ratios. And the maximum contribution, the biggest contribution, I should say, comes from 4 features out of the 11. Everything else is just completely subdominant. But the largest ratio of evidence is about e to the minus 3.8. So even on a patch-by-patch basis, you prefer Lambda CDM without these features. Nevertheless, it's about 16 times, the biggest one was about 16 times larger than what we'd expected from doing simulations with just Lambda CDM. So it's not statistically significant evidence for this theory, but it's kind of anomalous in a sense. And then we deem that these are not foregrounds. And if you look at the posterior, it's this case where it's peaked around zero. So the data does not support the bubble collision hypothesis. And from the shape, you can rule out that the total expected, you can say that the total expected number should be less than 1.6 at 68% confidence level. So that's all I had, and thanks.